Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about magnetic resonance imaging, a reading from a Wikipedia article summarizing this up. So you'll be recognized if you've got some sort of tumor, blood flow thing, injury, trauma. They'll send you to an MRI scan. It turns out it'll be a tad expensive. Here in Australia, everything is covered by Medicare or free. So I've had all this treatment here. It sort of cost me health insurance, but apart from that, everything else is relatively free. And of course, they cause question the efficacy of things if you are getting the incorrect treatment for any reason, or, you know, they were, you know, you show up if you're taking too much treatment. But an MRI machine, the size of small car, big donut shape. You sit your head inside the donut, or body part inside the donut. In fact, it's an all-body MRI machine, and you can fit inside this intense magnetic field. There's a clicking sound. As the magnetic field is adjusted and radio waves sent through you, and it produces an image. And what it does is it converts your body into a radio transmitter, and the radio transmitters interrogate the region of your body, and so the radio stations radio out how the little parts of your bodies are, and it can set a slice through your body. That is, the magnetic field is just right for the radio frequency all up, and it actually means that your body radiates a slice or a plane through your body in three dimensions, cut right through you. And that's things on a, so if you were to get a pen in your forehead or a piece of paper and hold your edge onto your forehead and hold it at an angle straight through it, or a different slice through it, you can arrange it such that in that plane the magnetic field is just right to of the correct intensity, is just such that the signal given out by your tissue your tissue has got the right magnetic field to respond to the radio signal. So the radio signal comes in, excites it, it quickly scrambles it, but then you send in an echo pulse, and the echo pulse flips everything else, and so it sort of reflects it, and it reassembles as an echo, a ping, and your body echoes. But the strength of the echo and the nature of the echo tells us all about the inside of your body. It's pretty incredible. So it's an RF system, and I'll just go apart and read the MRI scan cross section, a schematic of the construction of a cylindrical superconductor MR scanner. So magnetic resonance, the actual proton, the actual individual basic particles, mass particles, have a magnetic moment. They spin construction, and they can spin a line with or against the magnetic field in a quantum mechanical way. It's beautiful, the actual physics of it connects you to the actual whole universe in a beautiful way. Okay, the MRI scanner cross section, the little box on top is the surface connection, including emergency cryostat vent pipe, thermal insulation. Cryostat with liquid helium is a circular thing, superconducting primary electromagnetic coil. So basically this is this big coil of magnetic field. I wonder if how they increase it. There's also magnetic gradient coils, which adjust the actual strength of the field in different directions. RS transmit coil, so that's pumps up your so it transmits it. It's stored in your body and then released from your body later on. The scanner bore, which is your head goes into it, and then looking, this is another view. There's a body part specific receive coil, Don't know how that goes. But it's, the scanner tape. So there's actually, pick-up coils around your head to pick up the signals from your head. In my case, it would be you stick your head in a body part specific receive coil. So it's a bit hard to say. This is like the worst diagram I have seen in my entire life. Because now, only when I read it, is they've broken the fundamental laws of scientific schematic diagrams. So the idea is that the schematic diagrams is two dimensional cross sections, but as folded up in a box. So if you have a GIF box and you fold it up flat, if you look at it from one side, rotate it, you should rotate the box, you should be able to see it with the rotations. Here the article has not done that. They've rotated one of the diagrams through, they just placed it incorrectly. It's just mad what they've done. It's insulting what they've done. Okay, we're on to T1 and T2. So T1 and T2 are two relaxation things at times for the magnetic field lines. So just to get you up, there's, say, two ways the little proton magnets can align. Just to visualize it, say that your magnetic field lines are going from 0 to 90 degrees upwards, i.e. that there's a south pole above us, and so the magnetic field lines point in the direction of, if you have a little north pole, where it would rotate. So this is to get your mind around it. So magnetic field lines emerge from a north pole, go to a south pole, and your little magnets your north pole will align to the south pole. So the little arrows point to the south magnetic pole. So just on Earth, the south magnetic pole is in the north pole, up where Father Christmas is. And we, down in Australia, in our Antarctic territories, have the magnetic north pole, or which is close to the geometric, or the map south pole. So just get your head around that. And we have T1, T2. So these magnets, they've only got two angles. Now, just to get it from there, say if you have, now the way that it's described is, 0 degrees is pointing straight out, 90 degrees is flat, 180 degrees is to the bottom. Okay, so if you get your protractor, move your protractor as you normally have your protractor flat, have it such that the bulge is going clockwise with the 0 degrees vertical and the minus 80 degrees going downwards, and 90 degrees is going out to the right left orientation. Now what we have here is that the these magnets, they're magic magnets, they can either point completely at, not quite 90 degrees, at 0 degrees, they point at, say, 5 degrees, or they can be flipped over completely and point at 175 degrees. That's their north can face that direction. Now, that's all to do with quantum mechanics, and they can't go to 6 degrees, 10 degrees, it's only 5 degrees. Now, that angle that it can go to is determined by the angular momentum and the strength of the field to it. Now, I'll have to think a little bit more about it, but it's what happens is, in strong magnetic fields, these don't point quite 0 degrees, they point at 5 degrees off, like a spinning top. There's force pushing them to align with the magnetic field, but they can't quite, because that force, as you increase the force, as it begins to turn to that field, the torque applies to its angular momentum and gets it to precess. So it spins like a top. In this example, in your imagination, at 5 degrees, or it can actually be flipped opposite and spin at at 175 degrees. Now, when it flips, now one of the things to get into your imagination is that it doesn't magically go in between 5 degrees very quickly to 10, to 90, to 175. It actually pulls inside out. It actually, if you can imagine, the pointing up at 5 degrees at that point and punch it through. And so, really, it flips from 5 degrees to minus 175 degrees. And it goes, like, both of those at 5 degrees, if you're going around the plane, that's a really important thing. And this is to do with spin and our universe. And this angular momentum, there's a lot of interesting things to do with it. But there is an absolute, there's no absolute position in the universe or absolute velocity. You can always, you know, if I've got a platform and I push it forward on the platform, a whole platform at, say, 5 meters per second, I can go another 5 meters per second and build a platform on that platform which moves at 5 meters per second, and I build another platform on that platform. I can keep on adding it up. And as far as I'm concerned, I could always go at 5 meters per second. There's nothing to stop me. And essentially, you can, in your own mind, go faster than the speed of light. What actually happens is that the universe lengths contract, so you can still get there in any time that you want, except what happens is that your the distance of the universe contracts. And so for the outside observer, your clock slows so down, your length contracts to the outside observer, and you can't travel faster than the speed of light. But in your own framework, you can. There's nothing to stop you increasing. Now, this is the XYZ motion. There's no absolute value, XYZ, VX, and VY, VZ. There's no, you know, origin, which is the actual 000 of the universe, and there's no, that origin is not actually fixed at a point V, X, V, Y, V, Z equals 000. There's just no such thing. So it's sort of very interesting to look at it and actually get that. We've got, I think there's a butcher bird you can hear above me talking. But this is not true for rotation. There is an absolute 0 degrees of the universe, an absolute 90 degrees, 180 degrees, it is. It's true. And your rotation, you can tell how fast you're rotating in a complete flotation tank. So if there was, you were in a black box in a flotation tank, you know, miles out of things, and they spun you around, you could tell that you were spinning. There's an absolute spin. And part of that absolute spin means that it all comes out in the wash, that there's particles have an absolute spin, but a proton has S2 symmetry, which is 720 degrees rotation inversion, and part of that is you get a factor of 2 in your magnetic moment, and you also get part of the wash is can have spin up, a spin half, and minus a half, and in that spin, the north either points to the big south pole, or points, you know, it doesn't like doing it. The north to north, it can be inverted. And the way it swaps spin is it actually pulls inside itself, and as it does so, it emits a radiation by magnetic dipole transmission moment. So it's not an electric dipole transmission moment, which is the standard thing most light comes out. You can't actually get magnetic dipole transition moment. And so this can be, the protons can be pushed inside out. That's one of doing it. And there are two times. And so what happens is that you have a population where majority is of the spins are randomly aligned with respect to each other, and they're all facing up at say 5 degrees. What happens is that a radio wave will push it. Say if you've got 10 on the 10 pointing up and 0 pointing down, 10 at 5 degrees and 0 at minus at 100, well, I suppose minus 175 degrees. I like to set that like that. And you've got 0 at that, so that's a more important way to affect it. It helps you that the extra spin doesn't move, get rotated, the extra spin gets inverted. That's one way to see it. So you start off with 10 and you put in a big wave, and what happens is you pump it really hard and you get 3 pointing down and 7 pointing up. But and then you pump in more, I'm going to get another 3. Now what happens is you pump in the next ray, amount of energy, and what will happen is that it's enough to pump 3 down. So it'll pump 3 down, but you now have a population of, say, 4 down, and that same energy which pumps it down flips it back up again. So the maximum you can ever get, ever, due to RF frequency, is 5 down, 5 up. And as you start, the first couple are easy, but as you start to populate the lower state, or sorry, really it is the upper state, the same radiation. Now it is Einstein's equations, and it's actually fairly easy to get out. It's sort of, wow. Yeah, it's easy to go up. So this RF pulse flips at most 50%. Yeah, if you really hammer it, you'll get 50%. And pumping it up and down. And and it's a coherent RF pulse, which is an important thing, like equivalent to a laser source. And so it's coherent, so the phase of this is coherent. So what happens is that on average you're going to get the rotation rate. So you can imagine that's at 5 degrees, and another it's got two angles, the angle from the azimuth and the angle with respect to the azimuth. I don't know what you'd call that one, the horizon, the horizontal rotation. So that horizontal rotation can be 5 degrees from the vertical, and then around the vertical can be anywhere to 360 degrees. I'm not using pi or anything like that, I'm just making it very simple for you. Now what happens is that radio wave going in sufficient will eventually get 50%, 5 pointing up and 5 pointing down, and it will tend to do this. And how it does it, I'm just the mechanics of this, I'm absolutely not completely 100% sure about how it does it. In that, is there a random jittering that it randomly goes across? And but what you do is you cultivate a population of them, so that in a local area everything is in phase on that horizontal 0 to 360 degrees. So what happens is that you will have and that 0 to 360 is rotating around there so many times a second, the RF frequency. And so this process will generate coordinated, coupled proton nucleuses. So the fact is that you are measuring not just one, but two coupled processing nuclei, which are in phase. And one will be facing up and one will be facing down on average. And the two will travel together and they will produce a net vector pointing at 90 degrees. You've got zero pointing up, 180 pointing right down, 90 is exact. So you've got the two of them to come together to produce at 90 degrees. So when they say there's a 90 degrees pulse, what they're really saying is a 90 degrees pulse produces an equal population of up and down and in phase. And so your 90 degrees little pulse there will be there, and as the different parts of your body rotate at slightly different angles, different speeds, that rather than being one vector, that vector will spread out and smear out, and as it smears out, it will still radiate, but it will radiate out of phase, sort of a really random phase, and so it will stop to radiate. It only radiates back out when all the vectors are in series and in phase. Otherwise, that just cancels out the energy produced from in the magnetic field. So it can actually produce it. Now, there's heaps of maths equations going in my head saying, oh, how does it do this? How does it do that? Look, the honest answer is there's certain aspects of it. So what happens is that obviously there is energy stored in your body, and if we can coax these antenna to suddenly go in phase, your antenna will suddenly produce a pulse. How we do that is that we have we've got two time constants. There's the time constant for the actual population, so over time it will return to its thermal equilibrium of mostly in the lower state. So it's time constant of, you know, how long lived it is pointing at how long when you actually flip it or punch it through to -175, how long does it stay there before it says vibration, other things hit it, and it flips back down to the bottom shelf. That's T1. T2 is, I've now aligned these up in this fake 90 degree thing, these two together. How long do they, does the, so it's like a cheering crowd where everyone goes, Hawthorne, Hawthorne, clap, 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 Hawthorne, clap, clap, clap. And while they're clapping together, it goes out. How long does that last before everyone just sort of claps randomly and sort of no sound comes up? And that's T2. And there's two aspects of T2. Now, how they actually measure T1 or some aspects of T2 or T1, I find a bit hard to do. So you get, actual fact, three signals from that you pick out of your MRI machine. You can get the actual proton density, which is the actual initial, you know, the amount of stuff that's there. So if you've got nothing there, it will produce no signal. If you've got something there, it will produce a signal. Then once it produces a signal, you can tweak it and look at it and say, how long does it take for it to actually, when I sort it out, so what happens is that you produce it, then the energy is stored and lost in it. You put in an inversion pulse, which actually puts the up to the down and the down to the up, and in that, in the inversion, it actually reorients it on its rotation, so it rephases a certain amount of time after your echo pulse. So you can measure the rate at which it dephases on the individual things, and you can measure how much it decays over time. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. how you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.